everybody. Welcome to the Super Podcast. I am your terrible host, Bede. I hope you're all doing very well today. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Oh, wait, Marcy isn't here today. Or is she?
Hello.
Marcy, hello, you sound, Marcy, you sound a bit different today.
I took hormone pills. No.
No, as you can plainly hear, it's definitely not Marcy. Marcy's not here today because at the moment she's having a very, 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 very private post-Oscar party with Michael Fassbender, Jean Dujardin, Colin Firth, and Kenneth Branagh and Gary Oldman.
Seriously? So that many?
Yep. Yes, that many.
I don't know if they can handle her.
I don't think they won't know what hit her once they go to
that. I mean, that's what
that
I mean. The other way around, I have no concerns, but Christ almighty, I don't think they, well, then again, what am I kidding? Gary Oldman, he can handle anything.
Yeah, but I reckon they'll all be very sore afterwards, but, you know, that's a whole different story altogether. But
yes.
But in actual reality, Marcy's not feeling well today, so we're doing the show without her today.
Marcy.
But hey, we hope that she gets well very soon.
For sure. I know. Yep. I know she wanted to be here, but that's okay. So, what are we talking about today?
Oh, well, but first I've got to introduce you.
Oh yeah,
that's
right.
But I'm filling in for
Marcy
today.
I'll just pretend I didn't speak.
Yes, Dobby.
Dobby.
But I'm filling in for Marcy today is one of our regular guests and as well as a contributor to SuperMarcy.com and as well as a contributor to JoeBlow.com with Movie Hotties is our resident Canadian bacon, Nick Bosworth. How you going, Nick?
Hello, Bede. How are you tonight?
Oh, not too bad. Thanks, Nick.
I just got here. I heard Marcy just a minute ago. Or did I? No. Never mind.
No.
Okay, this isn't running anymore.
It was all in our heads, but that's a whole different story.
Marcy's always there in some way, shape, or form.
Exactly, but she's here with us in spirit.
Always.
So.
And it's her website, so whatever she says goes.
But, exactly.
Yeah, happy to be here, and definitely cool, just the two of us. And what be the topic of discussion tonight?
Well, actually, Nick, before we actually start the show, isn't there this question has been eluding the show the last few weeks. I only just realized that till recently because I haven't been asked this question on the last couple of shows. You know what question I'm talking about, Nick.
I do know the question you're talking about, and I remember I filled it in with a smart-ass question the last time. Marcy wasn't with us, but I'll stick with it straight this time, and will you tell us, Bede, why you are a terrible Australian?
Alrighty, Nick. I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen Just Go With It.
Which one is that?
That's the one with Adam Sandler who's not playing two characters.
What the fuck? Well, at least it's got, what's her face?
Jennifer Aniston?
No, the other one. The other bimbo.
Glenn Decker.
Yes.
I'm in love.
I guess I shouldn't call her a bimbo, but...
Well, she was like one of the few best parts about the movie.
Yeah, pretty much.
And she was pretty easy on the eyes, I should say.
Yeah, she is. I mean, Aniston can be sometimes, too, but... I don't know. Kate Upton seems to be... it's like Brooklyn and her are kind of battling it out.
Yeah, they should definitely star in a movie together.
That's the thing, the supporting hot chick roles. It's like a constant battle between the two of them.
Exactly.
But, yeah, that is definitely an awful pick, and we should toss you in movie jail. Along with Adam,
exactly.
Even though Adam somehow seems to keep getting out, I don't.
But I will say this, Nick. I will say this. I bet any money that Just Go With It will most likely end up being the much better movie than Jack and Jill.
And you know what? I'll never find out.
But you know, I'll have to find that because you know I'm terrible and I have to watch all these movies. So
your reputation must keep going. I understand, but that doesn't sound like shit.
Yes. But we'll move right along to our topic. which is our... Now, the other week, we did our pre-Oscar show, which you can go listen to right now. And now, since the Oscars were held yesterday, we're doing our post-Oscar show. So for this one, we're going to be talking about... we're going to talk category by category of the winners, what we thought of the winners, do we think they deserved it or not deserved it, and then overall we'll talk about the show itself. Was it better than last year's, or was it worse than last year's? So we have plenty of stuff to talk about. So, but we'll start off with the first category we're going to be talking about. We'll chat briefly, because both Nick and I were in two separate Joe Blow Oscar prediction contests. You were in the staff one, Nick, and I was just in the regular everyday schmo one.
Yeah.
And we'll talk... sorry.
We probably both did just as badly, but... I don't know. How did you make out in the end?
I actually did pretty well. I actually, out of the 24 categories, I got 20 right.
That's better than mine. I got killed by Streep. I think we all did.
Yeah, I think so, because I just realized, because, like, I ended up with totally my score, it was 79.
Yeah.
And the overall winner of the contest, and his points ended up being, I think, 87.
Right.
And I just keep thinking, like, if I had chosen Meryl Streep for Best Actress, I probably would have tied for first place, or at least second. Yeah. Second place.
Nothing. We haven't seen the official numbers yet for the staff, so still waiting on that.
Yeah, well,
but I know I lost badly anyway. So,
yeah, I think. I did pretty well for myself, especially over the last few years, because I've sort of suffered really badly in the last 3 years of the contest. So,
same. It's
definitely. I'm definitely a bit more happier that I did much better than I expected this year. So, but we'll talk about, like, ones we got wrong and right in the category. So we'll start now. And the first category, the winner of, is visual effects, and the winner of this category was Hugo.
Now, this is a tough one, and I hate to bash it because I still haven't watched Hugo yet. But I'm telling you, I've seen the previews for that, and I've seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And I'm on the same boat as everybody else. I think Rise should have won. I never in a million years thought that Hugo was going to win that award. I mean, I give it to Real Steel over Hugo. Real Steel was incredible.
Well, having seen you, Hugo, and the visual effects in the film are pretty incredible. And there are some, just also, you know, just to expand on the world of which the film is set in. And also, there are some sort of CGI creations in it as well. And the film is pretty spectacular looking with its CGI. But I do agree in the sense that Rise of the Planet of the Apes was a bit better, because you got CGI characters who, you could, like, with their, were very astonishing, because you could, they were able to express what these CGI characters were feeling.
Yep.
Through their facial expressions, which is pretty extraordinary.
That's what I mean. I remember when watching the first official trailer, and there was that finishing shot of Circus in his cage, just looking off camera. Mm. It was one of the most, the photorealism was out of this world, and then you see the actual film. I compare The Lost last night to a couple years back when Transformers first came out.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Do you remember what won? It was the Golden Compass. Which, I'm like, I could tell was CGI. You watch Transformers was the next generation of special effects, and it lost. I'm like, why? Because you just don't like the movie? Or it made no sense to me, but...
I don't know.
Yeah, or I guess we're definitely... I mean, Real Steel even had incredible special effects. Like, almost Transformers level, where everything looks so realistic, along with, of course, the animatronic real versions. But I don't know. Maybe when I see Hugo, I'll have a better idea. But for now, Play of the Apes.
I have to admit, I actually picked Harry Potter in the end of my prediction, and this is one of the four I lost with, because I figured, you know, with Harry, you know, it's the last Harry Potter film, and recently, it won the BAFTA for visual effects, so I figured, oh, well, you know, it might win here, you know, being the last film, but I was kind of surprised that it didn't end up winning. But I suppose if a film that's not... But I did say this on a previous podcast. I should have realized that Hugo could have won this... was going to win this category just for the fact that it was nominated for Best Picture. And usually when a film... A visual effects nominated film is also nominated for Best Picture, it ends up usually winning, like, you know, other years, like The Curious Case of Benjamin Button and whatnot.
Yeah,
but,
that's true.
So I'll have to keep that in mind for future reference from now on, but I have to admit, there was a little part of me that kind of was hoping for Transformers 3 to kind of win it, just to make up for the fact that it should have won back in 2007, but...
It definitely, at 3 was an incredible send-off for it, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, and to me it's the best CGI of the entire series was in part 3.
Oh yeah, had to be.
Yeah, so I'm disappointed by that, but then again, I also enjoyed the visual effects in Hugo, so congratulations on that win. We move on to our next ones, which is the sound categories, sound editing and sound mixing. And both of these went to Hugo.
Again, I don't know if the like the actual sound mixing and the editing is that complicated in Hugo. I mean, to be honest with you, I cannot imagine that they're both like that. Hugo is more complicated than Transformers. You can't convince me because you know, in Hugo you've got trains and, you know, crashing. In Transformers you have all synthetic robot sounds, you have, you know, explosions and debris and gunfire and atmosphere all over the place. It's like, I don't know. Like, the technical awards are all just a flip of the coin.
Yeah.
You don't know why they choose these movies. They just, for some reason, they do. I wish they'd release, like a video on how these nominees get picked and how the actual judges and the voters themselves actually pick them.
Because, well, I read somewhere that it's really, like, the technical categories are actually, I think, voted by people who work in that industry.
Yeah.
So, like, the sound in Hugo is pretty incredible. It's like, it doesn't have like, the award doesn't necessarily need to go to the film with the loudest sound or anything. It just needs to what goes to the film in which the sound basically enhances the viewing experience of the film. And Hugo's the sound effects in Hugo are pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Like, but also, like, Warhorse had incredible sound as well, and
I
so did
Warhorse
Trent.
In my funny enough, I got it right for the sound mixing. I got Hugo, but for sound editing, I put Warhorse because I figured all the battle scenes and everything were going to be very, very technical in that nature, and turned out to be wrong on that one. So again, for Hugo, I guess it really is that good.
Yeah, well, I picked both Hugo for both, so I was happy about both of them.
I thought
winning.
About it,
but I kind of figured Poor Horse might have been like one of the snubbed films of the night, so that's probably why I went against it, and it totally paid off.
Exactly.
Our next one is Best Live Action Short, and that went to the film The Shore, which I did pick, and so I'm happy that it won that. Because a lot of people were picking one of the other nominees called Tuba Atlantic.
Yeah.
But some people were kind of going for a couple of Oscar bloggers and all that.
I picked Raju. To be honest with you, I haven't seen any of these. I don't know where you find them. I don't know where people see them. Like, the best live-action short and the best animated short are two categories that, for me and most people, every year are just a toss in the air.
Yeah.
Which one is everybody talking about?
Yeah, that's what I... With the short categories, I always do a bit of research and find out from people who have seen them which ones... And because these ones are usually the ones that I end up maybe only picking one or two with, because it is pretty hard to figure out what wins the short categories.
Yeah,
because you don't know any of these movies.
No, because we're never going to get them.
Yeah, but you can. I think usually after the Oscars, they always put all the shorts up online somewhere, so you can definitely watch them now. I think the winner of our next category is definitely online now for your viewing pleasure at a couple of movie websites. And that, of course, was the Best Animated Short winner, The Fantastic Flying Books of Mr. Morris Lesmore.
Which I got right.
Which I got right, too. So, congratulations on that one. And
yeah. I mean, I definitely want to see all these shorts, but it's like, holy crap, you don't know where to find them. And if you do, it's, I don't know. It's just
I think you can buy them on iTunes. Like, you can buy, like, all the animated shorts on
Bad. Okay. Maybe if that's the case. They definitely advertise them a little bit more, though.
That's why I sort of keep a lookout on movie blogs, because usually they'll post a link or something on there on YouTube or something where you can watch them. The next category is Best Original Song, which
yeah, quite a toss-up.
It's probably the easiest category of the night because it went to Man or Muppet from The Muppets.
Well-deserved.
Very well-deserved, and it's pretty cool that one of the Flight of the Conchords is now an Oscar winner.
And technically, Jim Parsons, in a way, has definitely earned his part. And I don't even know if he got a thank you last night. I was listening. It's like, I didn't hear a thank you to Jim Parsons for being part of it. I don't know. Because it seemed like that little... What's that character's name, the new one?
Walter.
Yeah, he looks a lot like him. Like Jim Parsons. Like, is he based off of him? But I haven't seen the movie yet, but I have listened to the song, and it is really, really, really good.
And, yeah, it is.
It's very
Elton John influence.
Yeah, when I you agree sort with of that. Listen to it. Especially all the piano and...
Jason Segel's singing in that song sounds very Elton John, which is kind of scary.
I know. But the certain lack of original songs is a little strange, but...
Yeah. I was sort of explained that on the last show where why there's only two nominees this year, but I'm hoping at least next year they kind of fix that problem and actually go back to five nominees, because there were a lot of great movie songs that came out last year, and you know they weren't nominated. So, like another Muppet song, "Life Is a Happy Song," which is a pretty memorable and definitely, in my opinion, Oscar-worthy song. But at least the Muppets won somewhere, and this marks the first time that a Muppet movie has won an Oscar. So, congratulations there.
For sure.
Yep. We'll move on to another award: Best Original Score, which went to The Artist,
which I also got right.
Me too, I got this right as well. And I think it's a well-deserved win because I previously said on the pre-show that I knew The Artist would win because it's a movie, like The Artist is a silent film, and one of the things about silent films is the score, because you need... Yeah, it depends on it, and you need the music to convey everything that's happening in the movie, since there's no dialogue or anything like that you can hear. So, and it's important that a film like this have a good score, and I think the score for The Artist is pretty memorable.
I do as well, and I thought it was very good. It was not my favorite of last year in terms of an original score. I think quite a few amazing scores were snubbed. Including Super 8, which was one of my top faves. There was also Hannah, which I thought had a top-notch score, but I can't imagine the voting committee, who are, like, apparently a bunch of old guys, voting for Hannah's very new techno kind of score. But
But to be fair, they did vote the Social Network for Best Original Score last year. So.
They did, yeah. But then you wonder where was Trent Reznor and Atticus this year?
Well, they probably thought, oh well, he's already won another Oscar. We don't want to give him another one, so let's
tell that spread to John the field Williams.
Exactly, let's spread the field around so there could be four nominees. See what I did there?
Yeah, exactly. it was a very nice score, and it definitely set the mood of the film. I especially loved the beginning of Artist. I'm not going to give anything away, but there was a lot of drama, a lot of actions going on. You sink right into the idea of a silent film right away. yeah. just because of the score. But yeah, I'd say out of the nominees, it was very well deserved.
We'll move on to Best Makeup, which went to The Iron Lady, which I have seen The Iron Lady, and the makeup in that is really good. Like, it's spectacular, and I think it's a well-deserved winner of this category.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people sort of thought Harry Potter would win, but I don't really remember much, you know, in terms of makeup and all that in the film, other than, you know
they got the goblins, they got, you know... you got Ralph Fiennes again, Voldemort, you got everybody's, you know, death, and then you've got the kids when they were older,
mm-hmm.
which I thought the makeup was fantastic at making them older.
I thought the makeup when they were older was a little bit off-putting, to be honest, but...
It's kind of scary in that way, I know, yeah. but that's what I thought it was kind of off-putting because it was really good.
Mm.
It was like, holy shit. I mean, it's well, hard to hide... Yeah.
Totally forgot about the old age makeup, but I was thinking more like creatures and all that. And it's funny though, because a lot of people thought about, well, what about Ralph Fiennes, his makeup? And I said, well, people seem to forget that his nose was CGI'd out of the movie.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I mean, you can argue it all day, but I remember people were saying, why wasn't J. Edgar nominated? I'm like, because the makeup was terrible at times.
I haven't seen J. Edgar yet, but I have heard the makeup in it is not that good.
Oh, buddy, you wait till you see the two of them, Armie Hammer and Leo DiCaprio, in their old man makeup, out in the sunlight. It's unbelievable how bad it is. and then for the rest of the film, they're all in like shadows and it's dark in the room, so it looks better.
I think that was deliberate by Clint Eastwood, because he knew that the makeup must have been bad, so so he put him in darkness.
That's exactly it. But I guess. I mean, I've seen like some of the de-aging process in Iron Lady, and I guess it was probably a decent pick for out of what they could pick anyway.
We'll move on to Best Foreign Language Film, which went to A Separation.
Very
which,
well deserved.
Well, I haven't seen the movie yet, but I have been wanting to for a while, and I hear it's pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And this probably marks the first time that a favorite in this category has won in a few years, because usually the favorite in this category doesn't usually win.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought it might have gone to In Darkness.
I thought it probably might have. I mean, Concentration Camp movie or The Ghettos.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, boom,
well,
we know it's
the Holocaust kind of movie. So,
yep.
But I did pick A Separation in the end. It ended up being a win for me.
Sweet.
We'll move on to our next one, which I think is one of the two big surprises of the night, and that was for Best Film Editing, and it went to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah, that was actually, as much as I got that wrong, I thought it was going to go to The Artist.
I did too.
Yeah, I seriously thought the way it was going. But, I was actually pleasantly surprised by that. And I was happy, in a way, that they actually won, even though I lost 5 points off that. But, it is an incredible job. All the editors that work with Fincher are just... You have to be the best with that guy. But they kept up an incredible pace in the film and just a great job. And, I'm really happy that they won.
Mm. Well, like everyone knows, that it's no secret that I wasn't a fan of the movie. And, I don't really know what to think about in terms of editing. Like, I think the other nominees in the category were a bit better in terms of editing. But, you know... But, well, it was a surprise that it won, like, you know, but, you know, whatever.
Well,
I still would have won.
Yeah.
But it's just like I have no feelings towards The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, so this was, like, one of my big disappointments of the night.
See,
was...
and I do, because I haven't seen the original. And
yeah.
I haven't seen it because I didn't want to go into Fincher's version comparing it.
Mm.
I don't know, I didn't want to be biased from the beginning.
Yeah.
So, but I still have yet to watch it, so I still need to.
Yeah. But, we'll go on to our next one, which is documentary short, which I did pick and won, and that was Saving Face.
I got the tsunami and the cherry blossom.
Yeah, but a lot of people sort of picked Saving Face, so that's the one I went for, and it ended up being correct. So that's all good.
And I ended up being wrong. Fabulous.
Then we went to Best Documentary Feature, which I think was the hardest category to pick because there wasn't really any, like, front runner or anything. Like, any of these documentaries could have won. And to me, and the winner of this one ended up being the film Undefeated.
I thought it was going to be Paradise Lost 3.
I did pick it for a while, but then at the last minute I decided to go with Undefeated. And it ended up paying off, so that was pretty good. But from what I hear, because it's from what I've heard from some people, it's like Hoop Dreams, but with football instead of basketball,
right?
Which and I have to say, good going for these guys. From what I was hearing on Twitter the other day, that this was actually the guys who made this film only just came out of film school, and this was their first film,
right?
So I'd say congratulations to them, and yeah, I mean. It's all good.
It does look good. Do want to see it. But, yeah, it was definitely a very hard one to pick. Even Pina was earning a lot of praise, and everybody's, oh, I hope Pina wins. Oh, my God, Christ, I don't know which one.
Yeah. And same with Paradise Lost 3 as well. But there is another documentary about the same subject that's coming out next year. So they might, if that gets nominated, it might win for that next year. Mm-hmm. And moving right along. To Best Costume Design, which went to The Artist, which I did pick.
So did I.
And this is kind of unusual, because usually the award goes to the film with the most extravagant costumes. And
it just, but this you know, year, you always know that if it's a period film, you know, in a way, even though pretty much every movie in that category was a period film,
yep.
Usually the period film with the very old style, you know, the tuxedos and the dresses and all that kind of stuff, it definitely goes to the one boasting with that much, even though you don't see a lot of, you don't see any color or anything in costumes. It's all black and white. I think that was pretty much a no-brainer.
Yeah, and the costumes in The Artist were pretty spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even though, like, there are costumes in, like, Anonymous that were, and even Hugo, which were pretty fantastic as well, but I'm glad it did go to The Artist, because it was pretty good with their costume designing.
Mm-hmm.
And now we'll go into another category, which is Best Cinematography, which went to Hugo, which was
a lie,
kind of. Well, the cinematography in Hugo is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Especially if you see the film in 3D, it's pretty amazing.
I'm sure it
but
is.
But I did want a little part of me want, and I did. I actually, this was one of the categories I lost, because I actually picked the Tree of Life of winning.
So did I think everybody did.
Yeah, and because the Tree of Life, the cinematography in that film is, whether you like the film or not, you can't disagree that the movie does not look fantastic.
Well, that's the whole point, and that's why I was, even when the guys who won for Hugo got up, it's like, we weren't expecting this. And to be honest with you, though, Drive should have won.
Mm.
It should have been nominated, and it should have won, because I actually think it's even better than Tree of Life. Just the
yeah, it's
style.
A pretty damn good cinematography. Oh,
God damn it, I just absolutely love it. But out of this list, I'm very surprised, and I absolutely would have given it to the Tree of Life.
Mm. I agree, too. It's because especially if it, since it's a Terrence Malick film, and usually his films are very visually stunning.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, he has like four more movies coming out over the next 2 years, so he might get another
sudden burst of films.
I know, it's like he's made five films in the last 30 years, and all of a sudden, yeah, I've got like four movies coming out in the next two.
I'm just going to work with as many people as I can and then retire.
Exactly.
Make as much money as I can and move on.
Exactly. moving right along, Best Art Direction, which went to Hugo, which I think is well deserved.
I picked The Artist on this again. I was damn sure with the theaters and the, you know, all the Broadway, you know, sets and everything like that. I was absolutely sure of it. It was either that or I was going to pick Harry Potter.
Because
It has incredible art direction. And you'd think, like you said earlier, that after eight films of incredible art direction and design, you'd think Harry Potter would take it. But no.
But the art direction in Hugo is pretty spectacular, and it definitely, in my opinion, was very well deserved of this film, because Martin Scorsese, he pretty much like built an entire like train station for the movie, and just like the little touches and all that with the set design, it's pretty spectacular. That's definitely have to check Hugo out as soon as possible, Nick, just to see the art direction of the film.
I know, it's pretty damn spectacular. I'm dying to see it. I initially was going to go see it when it was out in theaters, but things were busy, and to be honest with you, I didn't really want to see it in 3D at the time, and I'm sure it was fantastic, but I kind of heard mixed reviews on it. But
actually, I'll say this. I think the 3D in Hugo is probably the best since Avatar.
Yeah, see, that's... And I believe that. Even Jim Cameron himself said that. You know, it's like...
And I think it... Like, it's... I love the movie, but I think everyone should try to see this film in 3D, because it is amazing in 3D.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I can't wait to watch. I know I won't be seeing it in 3D anymore, obviously, but
unless it's on DVD or Blu-ray or something.
Yeah, exactly. A nice, clear 60-inch image is enough for me, but I am excited to see it, and I feel like a jackass that I haven't, since it won so many freaking technical awards. But I wasn't expecting that. But I'll accept that it was a really good choice.
We'll move along to Best Original Screenplay, which went to Woody Allen for Midnight in Paris.
Got that one
now,
right.
Now, I know you're not the biggest fan of Woody Allen, Nick, but for my money, this was a very deserving win, because Midnight in Paris is a very... was, to me, a great film. And it's very funny. And I actually saw this in the cinema, which is... Because this is, like, the first time I saw a Woody Allen film in the cinema in a packed crowd, and the audience was absolutely loving it up. They were having a great time watching it. And also, of the nominees, to me, it was the most original.
Right.
And because it has a time travel plot. Spoilers. And it's using effectively well, and it's also extremely well written, and it also does some really interesting things about says a lot of interesting things about nostalgia, both, you know, the good side of nostalgia and the bad side of nostalgia. So, and it's funny, it's charming, and it's beautifully written, and it features a lot of great performances in it. So it's definitely well deserved. Yeah,
yeah,
it's definitely well deserved.
It's Woody. Sometimes I don't know. I can't really. I don't connect well with his films, and I tend to get bored by the characters really quickly. But no, I'll give it a shot. I did get this category right. Although I was thinking for sure that the artist was going to take it again.
Yeah.
Even though it has no dialogue, really. But I remember a lot of people. The biggest contender, they thought the biggest surprise might be A Separation.
Yeah.
Because, like, the script is why the frickin' movie is so good.
Exactly.
I think it was probably a really good pick. Margin Call, I wouldn't have given it there. I didn't think the script was... I mean, I did enjoy the film, but the lack of explanation and the amount of, curveballs in the dialogue and whatnot, it's just like, no, I wouldn't even, it created more confusion than it solved, but I'd go with Midnight in Paris on that one.
Yeah, and also, Nick, you have to watch this, because this movie has Rachel McAdams and Marion Cotillard.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hey, Rachel, don't care.
Yep.
Marion, on the other hand,
la, 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 la. Yes. Well, I love Rachel McAdams, so that's a whole different story.
I don't know what it is, man. She does nothing for me. It's very strange. It's I don't know. Maybe she's too plain to me. I don't know what it is. Maybe it was after Sherlock Holmes or something, because she was so boring in the movie.
She was more underused in the Sherlock Holmes movies. But you know, that's a whole different story altogether. Yeah. So we'll
She is. I will give her that, but I don't know. Marion, that's a good story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. moving right along, we'll go to Best Adapted Screenplay, which I did also pick, right?
Yep,
and that was The Descendants, which was Alexander Payne, Jim Rash, and Nat Faxton, which I think is a very well-deserved winner, because The Descendants was one of my favorite films from last year. I'm trying to decide whether it's my number one or number two, but I think the script for that is beautifully written, and it deserved it 100%.
I had a funny feeling, and I did get it correct, but I had, having seen Moneyball, I was pretty damn sure that Sorkin and Zaylor were going to actually take it.
Yeah, I think if there was going to be an upset, I think it would have been them. I mean, it's Aaron Sorkin and Stephen Zellian, two of the best screenwriters working today.
Yep.
On the same script, so you think, oh, well, if something's going to upset The Descendants, it would be Moneyball. But I did enjoy Moneyball, had a great script, but I think... But I do love The Descendants a little bit more, so I'm very much happy for its Best Adapted Screenplay win.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. We'll move on to Best Director, which the winner was Michelle Hanzanamavicius, I think that's how you pronounce it, but I could be wrong.
who presented Best Director last night? Because whoever that was did it perfectly. Michael Douglas.
Douglas. Yeah, well, he probably is for like weeks just to get the name right.
Hazovs. Dad, how do you pronounce that? No, that's nasty. Sorry, Kirk.
I think it's a well deserved win. Like, I would have personally have chosen of these nominees, I would have chosen Terrence Malick, because his direction in The Tree of Life was outstanding and breathtaking. But I am happy that The Artist won Best Director. Wouldn't have been my first choice, but I'm happy that it did.
Yeah, I had a funny feeling it was either going to be him or Scorsese was going to take another one.
Mm. I think a lot of people, like, I guess The Artist haters wanted Hugo to win, but even though I do love Scorsese's direction in it, and I would probably put that over The Artist, but I am happy that Michelle did win, because it takes a lot of skill to make a silent film, especially in today's modern age, especially trying to make it exactly as they did make it back in the late 20s.
Yep.
And I think he did a really great job. Because he took some liberties here and there to, you know, give it a modern feel and that. But I think for most part, he captured the style and the tone and extremely well with his direction. So it's a good win, and I picked this one, so I'm happy about it.
Yeah, I would pick it as well. I mean, out of all these directors, I hate to sound like a broken record, but Drive's not in there. I know, it was, oh, fucking Drive, shut the fuck up with Drive. It's like, you know what, I don't care. Drive was my favorite film of 2011, and...
It definitely, mine too, and, like, I think if Drive had a better, nomination campaign, like get the movie out there so people will remember it and all that. I think that's really what happened. People just, it just came and it went and just forgotten about.
You can't beat the Weinsteins when it comes to Oscar campaigning.
Yeah.
But,
although we should take solace that the BAFTAs did remember Drive for Best Picture and Director, so kudos there.
At least they got that, but I hear you. It's just, it's definitely a hard pill to swallow sometimes, but out of the fact that I've seen The Artist and the fact that I absolutely loved it, mm-hmm. I think Michelle winning was definitely a good choice out of everybody.
Yep, I agree. Then we'll move to Best Animated Film, and that went to Rango, which I think is very well deserved.
I'm a little on the fence with this one, and the only reason I say that is because everyone's saying Adventures of Tintin could not be nominated because it's motion capture.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. It's still animated. I don't... Yeah. Who cares if they had the assistance of captured motion? I mean, even though they didn't really have that with Rango, they still based all the frames and all the movements on real shot footage of all the actors in the studio.
Yeah, like they shot the footage first and then... It's not like they put the dots on it.
Yeah, they didn't.
They just shot their reactions and all that, and then later on, then just basically copied what they did into a computer.
Yeah, and that feels like the exact same thing. So how come Tintin, which was vastly more complicated in terms of animation, why couldn't it be? But I'll leave.
I suppose they probably think it's similar to like something like a Scanner Darkly, where they think it's basically shooting something in live action and then just putting animation over it.
Yeah, but I definitely don't think that. I don't know if Adventures of Tintin falls into that category. There's a lot of like massive, you know, cinematography like type shots that almost wouldn't even be possible in real life. You know, like when he's rolling down the hill on that motorcycle, and you know, he hits.
Oh yeah, that's an amazing sequence.
I mean, that's fucking incredible. That's not something they could have shot with motion capture. That would have been, you know, that's straight animation.
You could die if you shot that in live action.
That's what I mean. It's like maybe they could have, you know, got J.B. Bell on wires or something like that, but I can't imagine. I mean, the animation is just incredible. But, I mean, based on who's in this list, though, Rango definitely takes it. A Cat in Paris was a very, very welcome and interesting a choice. I reviewed this one for Marcy back in last September, never thinking that it would get an Oscar nomination.
You know, it's what I like was reading the nominations list, and as soon as I saw A Cat in Paris get nominated, the first person I thought was you, Nick, because you wrote a review for it.
Yeah, I loved that movie, and I never thought I hope it gets a little bit of notice.
Yeah.
It's a relatively simple film, but the characters are so well done. The animation is absolutely out of this world. I'd love to own it on Blu-ray if there ever was a copy. And, I almost was rooting for it when it was first animated. But, I mean, if you go by the politics and by everything else, you know Rango was going to win, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, Rango is refreshing, too. Like, it's such a weird little animated film.
Yeah.
And I said on a previous podcast, it has a scene where Rango gets philosophical advice from an armadillo that just got run over by a car. So that kind of tells you a lot about this movie.
I definitely want it. I haven't seen it, so I haven't had a chance yet. But I definitely
check it out, because especially on Blu-ray, because it's so beautiful. Like, it's visually stunning.
Oh, I imagine. I watched the trailers. It's ridiculous.
And I'm just happy that the fact that the director of The Ring and Pirates of the Caribbean is now an Oscar winner. So that's cool. Yeah.
Let's just hope he doesn't fuck up The Lone Ranger.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, we're going to our bigger categories, which I think we'll have a lot of things to discuss about here. The first up is Best Supporting Actress, which went to Octavia Spencer for The Help.
Well-deserved.
I agree, and I loved her performance in the film, as well as Jessica Chastain's, but I'm glad it went to Octavia, and she gave a really great and very moving speech as well. And you could tell that she had no idea what she was saying, because she was that choked up and everything, and it was a nice little moment, and it's a great performance and very well deserved.
Yeah, Berenice was also fantastic in The Artist.
I agree.
I think even though it wouldn't have been an upset, I think there might have been a strong chance that she might have taken it.
Yeah, I think if there was more of an artist sweep, like say if it won more than the Oscars that it was nominated for, I think she probably could have easily have taken it out.
Mm-hmm.
But it just went to Octavia, and I think that's very well deserved, because she's definitely one of my favorite performances of a pretty strong slate of supporting actress nominees of this list, so.
Yeah, that's so funny. I was the other day, I was watching an episode of Big Bang Theory, and she's in one when Sheldon goes to get a driver's license.
Oh, okay.
And she's the girl behind the counter, and I texted my mom, and I said, I'm like, do you remember that episode with that girl behind the counter, you know, you always thought was so funny? She's like, yeah. I was like, that girl's an Oscar-nominated woman. You know, she's a freaking Oscar-nominated actress now. And I'm like, holy shit. I mean, she's...
Yeah.
And she was small. Like, nobody really knew who she was.
Yeah, she just sort of came out of nowhere.
She did.
The only really thing I really knew her from before, you know, seeing her in The Help, was she basically...
like in, I know you absolutely hated this movie, but she was the nurse that gets butchered to death by Michael Myers at the beginning of Rob Zombie's Halloween 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was her.
Hmm.
So if I told you, Nick, that that lady was going to go on to be win an Oscar in 2 years' time, nobody, everyone would be like, nah, that's not going to happen.
Nah, I wouldn't have believed it. No. Hey, you give them the right material, then they take it or they leave it.
Yep, they work wonders. Mm-hmm. We'll go on to our next one, which is Best Supporting Actor, which went to Christopher Plummer for
go
Beginners.
Go Canada! Go Canada!
I think a lot of people are surprised that I was actually surprised to find out that a while ago that Christopher Plummer was actually Canadian. I always assumed he was British.
Oh, he's Canadian. He's just too cool for, I don't know. He literally...
Sorry, Nick.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you go ahead.
He was definitely... this was a long time coming. And... Yep. He's an amazing actor, and I would have been happy if either him or Max von Sydow won, because both of them deserve to be on that stage at some point in their lives. But
yeah.
Chris was just incredible. I mean, we were all joking in the chat room during the thing. It's like, I'll bet you he regrets being in Star Trek VI now. And I'm like, fuck you, he was awesome in Star Trek VI. And, you know, I mean, he was in his 60s when he did Star Trek VI, and that was... Yeah, that was over. That was 20 years ago. You know,
exactly. And
yeah, it's like he's got such a wide range of characters throughout his. You know, he's going to leave behind an incredible legacy, like Christopher Lee and, you know, Max von Sydow and all these guys. And he gave a wonderful speech.
He did.
Very, very, and I laughed because. And I felt bad for him when they said, you know, Chris is the oldest actor to win an Oscar. I'm like, that's great. He's 82 and the Oscars are 84.
Exactly. And so, like, he's pretty much nearly as old as the Oscars.
Almost.
Almost, yes. I haven't seen Beginners yet, but I have been meaning to get around to watching it. But I hear that he is amazing in the film. Mm-hmm. And it's more than just like, oh, let's just give it to this guy just for... like a career achievement award,
yeah,
rather
exactly.
than the actual performance. But a lot of people have said that, like based on reviews and all that, that his performance in the film is pretty fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely want to definitely check it out as soon as possible. So
definitely.
Congrats, Chris. And this marks the third year in a row that somebody with the name of Chris has won an Oscar for a supporting actor.
Ooh, Christoph Waltz.
And Christian Bale.
Oh, yeah, Chris, yeah, that's true.
So if another Chris gets nominated next year, vote for them.
Excellent.
That was a terrible joke, but anyways. we'll move on to the next category. I think we have a lot to say about this one. I think if Marcy was here, she definitely would have a lot to say.
Yeah, I'd be cursing.
I think this... Yeah, and this is definitely one of the, I think, the biggest surprises of the night. Like, it's weird because I shouldn't have expected it. Like, I should have expected it, but I kind of went against the grain, and the winner for Best Actress was Meryl Streep for The Iron Lady.
Yeah, it was...
I can only imagine what the MFC chat room would have been like as soon as she was announced.
Oh, it was... The F-shots were... You wanted to see mine. I must have put about... I put F and 20 U's and then CK. I was so pissed because, A... I instantly lost the Oscar pool. And secondly, I was damn sure. I mean, I haven't seen The Iron Lady yet, but I was absolutely, without a doubt, certain that Viola Davis was going to take it.
I was too. And I've been rooting for Viola Davis ever since I saw The Help back a couple months ago. And I thought, oh, she's going to win it. And there was a lot of talk for her to win, and you know there was a lot of buzz and momentum for her to win, and then all of a sudden I was like, Meryl Streep, oh okay. But then again, at the same time, there has been a lot of momentum for the last couple of years for Meryl to finally win another Oscar again.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen The Iron Lady. The movie itself is kind of like, it has a lot of issues and it's kind of average overall, but I will say I thought she was pretty good in it. Like, a lot, I know Marcy
disagrees with me, but I did think she was really good in the film, and I think she was definitely the best thing about the film.
Right.
And I can see why people would think she didn't deserve it and all that, and some people, oh, it's just nothing but an imitation. But I think she brings a lot of touches to her performance in the film, especially in some of the more quieter moments.
That's exactly it. And I've read quite a bit, and I know Margaret's history as well. Yeah. And it's her closest friends who have seen the film. Yeah. Said it was one of the worst portrayals they've ever seen. Mm. It was nothing like that. And, you know, it's hard to make a film about a person where all... I mean, she's even still alive.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to make a film like that because they're all going to criticize the shit out of it. Oh, she wasn't like this. She didn't say this, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah. I mean, the film still does look great, and I do look forward to seeing it. But I don't know. I think...
Yeah,
I think maybe they just felt sorry for Meryl. I don't know.
No, I think it was like, I think if Meryl, I've been wanting for years for Meryl to win another Oscar again. Like, I'm not going to deny it, because I do love, I think Meryl is a great actress. She's one of the best actresses working today. But if she had to win, like, especially with her last nominations, I would have preferred if she won for Doubt, because that was like a powerhouse tour de force performance from her in there.
Yep.
Or even like Julie and Julia, which she was utterly delightful and charming as Julia Childs. And I would have think she would have deserved, like The Iron Lady, her performance is good. I'm not going to deny that. Like, it's a good performance, but is it one of her best or even better than Julia or even her Doubt performances? Definitely not. But I was very disappointed because I really wanted Viola Davis to win because I was absolutely... moved by her performance, and I thought that she would win.
Funny, but that you, in the end, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was hoping for her to win, and she was like I've said multiple times before. She was my favorite best actress of last year, but I'm disappointed. Like, but and also I'm kind of teed off too because it's because of Meryl. I could have easily gotten first place in the. Not to toot my own horn, but I would have gotten more points in the Oscar prediction contest, so I'm kind of a little peeved about that. But
yeah. well, funny enough, you mentioned Doubt. You know, you had Meryl and Viola. And,
yeah, exactly.
Viola won... she did win Best Supporting Actress, right?
No, she was nominated, but she didn't win.
Oh, I thought she did win. Yeah. But even though she was only in it for like 10 minutes total, but those 10 minutes were some of the best fucking acting I've ever seen in my life.
Exactly. And she brings that same kind of quality she brought to that film to The Help as well. And but both Meryl and Viola are friends in real life, and I don't think there is any rivalry because they do respect each other a lot. And I know I think Meryl was even pushing for Viola to win.
Yeah, she was. Well.
And she would have preferred Viola to win. But, you know, that's just how the Academy votes, so...
Exactly.
But like I said, I would have loved... I'm happy, in a way, that Meryl did finally get that third Oscar, but I just think it probably should have gone for her other performances. Not to say her performance in The Iron Lady is bad, but it's a good performance, but definitely not one of her best, though.
Rooney Mara!
Yeah. Well, less said about Rooney Mara. If she did win, I probably would have vomited, but not to say I hate... Not to say I hate her performance. She was fine, but, you know, like I said, I'm not a fan of the remake of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, so... Mm-hmm. But that's a whole different story. But now, for Best Actor, where the winner of this category was Jean Dujardin for The Artist.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I will admit, I probably would have preferred Clooney, because I thought Clooney was pretty fantastic in The Descendants. But Dujardin would definitely be my second choice after him.
I thought that I was damn sure that Dujardin was going to win. Now, I was fully prepared for Clooney to win.
Mm.
And I thought he was going to win. But to be honest with you, I would have been fine losing the Oscar pool if it had meant that Gary Oldman would finally get the Oscar he deserves.
Yeah.
Finally, for fucking once.
Well, I think, you got to remember, it took over 80 years for Christopher Plummer to get an Oscar nomination, and then when he picked up another nod 2 years later, he won. So who knows? Maybe Gary will definitely pick up another nomination at some point in
one day.
But we can proudly say he's no longer the greatest actor to never be nominated for an Oscar.
That's true. I mean, he's only 54.
Exactly. He's still got a lot more years ahead of him, and I think he will win at some point.
God, he's younger.
Who knows?
He's younger than Bruce Willis.
Exactly. And who knows? Maybe his performance in The Dark Knight Rises will be so amazing that they might give him the Oscar then.
They better give that movie all the Oscars next year, just for the entire series. Just like Lord of the Rings, honor the whole thing.
And Toy Story 3 as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But I do, I'm happy with Desjardins, and I'm really happy that he won. Although I'm kind of pissed off with a lot of people, because after when he won on Twitter, some people thought, the artist haters, I should say, pretty much, he shouldn't have won, and blah, blah, blah. Like, it's predictable, and it's boring, and it's safe, and what. And I just want to say this, people have no idea how bloody hard silent film acting is. Like it's easier to convey a character, what they're feeling and all that, through dialogue. But when you're doing an entire, pretty much a 98% movie in that's silent, and the only way you can, with no dialogue at all, and the only way you can, express what this character is feeling is through body language and through facial expressions. And that's why I give a lot of kudos for Desjardins, because...
Boo, boring, silent films suck.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be one of those haters.
But you have to agree with me, Nick, that silent film acting is pretty hard, and when you have no dialogue to express what your character's feeling, and you only have to do that through body language and whatnot, I have to give a lot of respect to the guy because, it's pretty freaking hard to do that. And I think he did an amazing...
His eyebrows should have won the... his eyebrows and his smile.
And his mustache.
Yeah, I know, that's an epic mustache. But they're... I mean, the real genius of the whole thing, and I don't really want to give the whole scene away, but there's one particular moment where there's a very special... he's all by himself... In a dress and makeup room.
I know which scene you're talking about.
This scene fucking blew me away, and I absolutely loved it. And it involved special sound, and that's all I'm going to say. But his reaction to the scene was so incredible. And if you know any history of silent film actors, you know that... The transition from silent film to using soundtracks and actually having dialogue ruined the careers of a lot of actors.
Yeah, especially people like Buster Keaton, whose career never recovered after Hollywood went to, quote-unquote, making talkies.
Yeah, because he sounded terrible. You know, all these actors who never had to use their voice suddenly have to, and they don't sound right, or they don't know what to do with the set.
Yeah.
But, yeah, out of everybody, though, I really do think that Desjardins really deserved it. I think,
I said, wasn't my first choice of the category. It was Clooney, but Desjardins definitely is just as worthy of the award, just as Clooney was.
Agreed.
And we'll move on to our final one, and that is the biggie, which is Best Picture, which went to The Artist.
I mean, again... I'm going to be the broken record again. I wanted Drive to win, but I think it was the far superior film to everything. But out of that entire list and a very mediocre and boring list it was, I would say The Artist is definitely the most deserving. I don't know if you'd think that Hugo, maybe.
I've kind of picked The Descendants, a little bit.
Is it really that good?
Well, I thought it was really that good.
Because the trailers don't thrill me.
Well, it's definitely a film you need to watch anyway, because I think The Descendants is a terrific film. It got me on a really personal level. It's both funny and moving and all that. But I think the list this year, this at least this picture, Best Picture list is a pretty solid list. Like, I've enjoyed all the films that were on here. Like, The Descent. Like, and then three of these films... Like, four of the films on this list actually made my top ten. Well, I haven't... Of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other ones, like, were pretty good as well. But, the like, a lot of people sort of figure, oh, The Artist, safe, and blah, 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 choice and all that. But I think it's a great winner, and I'm happy that it won. I have no problems with it winning at all. I mean, sure, I would love to have seen Drive get in there somewhere like everybody else. But, you know, that's just the way the cookie crumbles. But, you know, I'm happy with The Artist winning, and happy that it won.
Yeah, and I'm happy it won, too. And I really did enjoy the film. It's just, for some reason, that movie winning made me feel like the Academy is really trying to hold on to the past too much. It's like, okay, this is a film, we're going back to our roots. You should win. And I don't agree with that. I'd love to see one day for the Academy, and I don't think this has ever happened, where a Best Picture winner is something, the story takes place in the future, or it's, you know, it's new ideas. It's not, you know, old. It's not based on somebody else's life who's passed away or something like that. You know, not a pastime. Yep. I mean, the closest movie they ever did that was Crash, you know, or Hurt Locker, but Crash was a fucking terrible Best Picture winner, so I can't really argue with that one. But in general, though, out of everything on that list, I think that The Artist was definitely the most crowd pleasing.
Yep. And that's probably why it won, because you've got to remember, one of the most popular Best Picture winners of all time was the film Rocky.
Yeah.
Which is, like, it had a lot of stiff competition up against the likes of Network and Taxi Driver, which I think are superior films, but I do love Rocky because it is a great film, regardless of it being a crowd pleaser. And it is a crowd pleaser.
And it is.
And like The Artist, The Artist is a crowd pleaser as well.
Because as far as I'm concerned, I've always argued this for years, I think the crowd pleasers should be the ones to win. Like The Dark Knight, it was the most critically acclaimed, massive, you know, amount of fan praise and everything, and it gets no nominations. That makes no sense to me. I don't care what genre it's in. If the fucking world loves that movie, it should be nominated.
Exactly. I mean, look at Titanic. That was the biggest box office hit of all time, and it won Best Picture.
Yeah, God, we've got to deal with that in a few more weeks now.
but you got to remember, like, the Academy isn't just like, oh, we're just old-fashioned, we're just picking movies that we like but nobody else likes and blah, blah, blah. But you got to remember, these are the same guys who did vote films like Silence of the Lambs, The Departed, No Country for Old Men, and The Hurt Locker, as just said. Films that, you know, these movies aren't really Academy movies, I guess. The quote-unquote Academy-friendly movies.
Really? You don't think movies like that are...
Oh, well, they got prestige behind them because, you know, the filmmakers behind them. But I don't think, like, something like... Like, I can... No Country for Old Men is... I think that's not really, like, an Academy movie, though, when you kind of think about it.
Yeah, when you really get down to the nitty-gritty, I mean, it is... It's very violent. It's very strange. It's very slow at times, even though I don't think it lags at all. I'm just basing it on what other people think. But I could see. Yeah, I thought maybe The Artist was a very safe kind of movie, kind of like what the haters would say. But I mean, I would have been happy. Either way, if it won, I would have been happy. If Descendants had won, great. Everybody seems to love it. You know, there are a bunch of films in here that everybody loved anyway. It's not like, you know, Sandra Bullock's freaking movie, The Blind Side or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Where everyone hated the movie.
Yeah.
Yet she won Best Actress. I'm like, what the fuck? And this extremely loud and incredibly close, it was one of the worst reviewed films of last year. and yet it wins Best Picture. If that doesn't strike you as a bought and paid for nomination, I'm sorry.
Well, to be fair, I have seen that movie, and it actually is pretty solid. Mm. Not great, but solid, and Sandra Bullock actually deserves more of an Oscar for that film than The Blind Side.
Really?
But, you know, that's a whole different... Yeah, pretty much. But we'll move right along. We're sort of... we'll go on to one last topic before we finish up for today, and that is the overall show itself. What did we think of the show? Nick, what did you think?
I thought... I will admit I did one of my favorite aspects of last year, even though it was a train wreck for Franco and Hathaway, was the holographic dead Bob Hope that made a guest appearance during the show. He was absolutely hilarious, and it was more hilarious dead.
Bob Hope was more hilarious dead than Anne Hathaway and James Franco were that night.
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, it's not their fault. The writing was beyond fucking terrible. But dead Bob Hope was making everybody laugh. I had my buddy here and I, we were pissing ourselves laughing. And this year we were hoping he made a return. But unfortunately, no. But anyway, in terms of the actual show, I thought Billy was pretty much on cue for most of it. Billy Crystal, for 63 years old, he still had a lot of energy. He had more than I thought he would, especially with his opening singing and montage. And there were a lot of dry moments, but in general, I think this has probably been the most fast-paced, just get 'em done event, Oscar event in years. And one of the
You go ahead.
One of the main reasons, very few performances. There was only one by Cirque du Soleil, and the montages were very quick and things like that, and I was like, oh, thank God, just move on. Why do we, you know, just... Oh, but overall, in general, I thought it was pretty good. If we're excluding the nominees and the wins, we've already talked about it, I think it was pretty damn good. I think it went good. Emma Stone has proven her status as a goddess for not only being incredibly gorgeous, but also snapping Ben Stiller off at the knees for his past work. And I thought all the elements in general were pretty good.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to say, like, I've always enjoyed when Billy Crystal has hosted the awards.
Yeah.
I don't think it's his best one this year, but it was still far more enjoyable than it was last year, because last year was a bit cringeworthy with Franco and Hathaway. And like you say, I can't really blame them too much, because, like, then they weren't comedians.
No.
So, like, even though Franco has done Judd Apatow movies and all that type of shit before, but it just, like... After, like, 5 minutes, you can definitely tell he did not want to be there at all.
Nope.
But definitely Billy was a bit more alive than Franco.
Yes.
And, like, some jokes...
He knows the Oscars. He knows what it is. He knows what he's got to do.
Like, some jokes kind of fell flat, but there were some pretty funny jokes. And I did love the fact that he brought back I Know What They're Thinking segment.
That was funny.
That was that had me pissing myself laughing, because he brought that at the 1999 Oscars.
Yep.
And he did it again this year, and I absolutely loved it. It was hilarious, especially with Nick Nolte's reaction.
Oh my God. The look on Nolte's face was fucking priceless. He's like, you motherfucker. Brad Pitt. Can we get this over with? I got 6 parent-teacher interviews. I was like, yeah, that's pretty much it. But, he was definitely on fire with most of it. Yeah, there were some dry spots, but funny enough, I noticed that when he didn't seem to be following a script, he was kind of improvising.
Yeah.
That's when he was the funniest.
Yeah.
Like when the Academy producer came out and talked about the show. Directly afterwards, Billy made fun of him, saying, wow, he's a real, you know, holy shit, the thrills. Aren't you excited? I'm excited.
Like, it's like one of the things that cracked me up on the show was they've kept showing these little montages of some actors talking about movies.
Mm.
And I thought it was a very nice little montage they had during the show, because that's what I think a lot of people seem to forget about the Oscars, whether you agree or don't agree, whoever wins or not. To me, watching the Oscars always reminds me why I love movies.
Exactly, I agree.
And when you hear people talk about movies, like from whether they're the biggest stars in the world and whether they're watching movies that everybody loves or movies that nobody's really ever heard of, like with Brad Pitt with War of the Gargantuans.
Yeah.
It makes you realize that, you know, like, I have these same feelings as well when it comes to films and cinema and all that.
Yep.
And that's what I...
Yeah. Oh, sorry, no, go ahead.
And I was going to say, like, one of the things I love about the Oscars is that it's appreciation of cinema. Like I said, you can agree or don't agree whoever wins or doesn't win, but to me, that's what I always love every time I watch the Oscars, because it reminds me of that. And, I'm thankful for that.
Oh, yeah, I'll always watch the Oscars. I always love it. And I was going to say, I forgot about the fake screen testing of...
Yeah, that was
the
pretty
Wizard
funny.
Of Oz. That was fucking hysterical. Getting all the Christopher Guest and Fred Willard was just absolutely killing me with the flying monkeys.
I didn't like it until the monkeys showed up.
Where are the flying monkeys? It's like, we all knew... Fred Willard is just... hysterical that way, and of course Sacha Baron Cohen's genius entrance into onto the red carpet and making Ryan Seacrest look like an idiot.
Yep.
That was fantastic, even though Ryan took it better than I was hoping he would. I was hoping he'd get pissed off and throw a fit, but you're wearing Kim Jong-il and Jesus Christ, I love that guy. But overall, it was definitely better. It was definitely better than last year.
Mm-hmm.
Probably, you know what? It might have even been better than the year before. But
yeah, I can agree with that.
It was a step back in the right direction, and apparently, the viewership agreed. Apparently, it was a couple more million viewers this year than it was last year.
Yep.
So that's good.
I agree.
Overall,
and also love Chris. Yeah, overall, I think it was a pretty solid show. I enjoyed it. There were, like you said, there were dry spells, but there was a lot more hits than there were misses.
Yes.
And I also, and I actually will want to campaign for Chris Rock to host the show next year, because his segment of the show was downright hysterical.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. So he wears off on me quick. I don't know why.
But,
I think he's a very funny guy, but sometimes it's just shut up. I don't know what it is, but no, I like Chris, and I still want like Mel Gibson and Charlie Sheen to like host the show together. Just bring them out. My buddy had an idea. Just sit them on the stage with, you know, two chairs and a bar globe, and they just open it up and have a drink every now. They don't even have to do anything. They just have to sit there and talk, and we just cut to them every now and again.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, too many possibilities. But
we'll wrap up the show. And I hope everybody enjoyed listening to us talk about the Oscars. And you'll definitely hear us do the show again next year, both the pre-show and the post-show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to ask you, Nick, before we wrap up, where can people find you on the internet this week?
They can find me. Technically, I'm not doing much with Movie Hotties anymore. More run the YouTube page for Joe Blow and making videos. I made one this week called Snub 2012, which
I was going to mention that people should check that video out.
Yeah, it's been doing okay so far. I know I've had a... there's no melancholia. I'll be honest with you, people. I couldn't stand that movie. It was pretentious beyond words. But hey, whatever you like. But if you go to, there's also Movie Gods Live, which is my own personal YouTube page. And other than that, you can see my stuff scattered all over the place, to be honest with you. How about you, Beat?
Oh, well, you can find me.
I'm trying to think of a joke, because I usually do, but I can't think of one right now, so it's a bit embarrassing. Well, you can find me gloating about the fact that I got 20 out of 24 predictions correct at the Oscars on a regular basis.
Pretty good, considering the surprises, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And although, like I said, if I get two more, I probably would have won, but, you know, that's a whole different story. But I'm not going to be upset about that. Anyways, no. But you can also find me at twitter.com/BeJamine or my Facebook page at facebook.com/BeJamine or my Movie Fan Central page at moviefancentral.com/TerraStralis. And you can also find my weekly writings for supermarcy.com. for both my movie song of the week, which I will post up the second of the two best original song nominees from this year's Oscars up on. And also you can look out later this week for my latest DVD review of the Australian film Here I Am, which should be up sometime later this week.
Nice. And much love to a certain Super Marcy,
who, of course,
definitely we wish was here, but... definitely wasn't feeling well, so all the best to you, sweetie, and wrap this up.
But we all know that she's enjoying her post-Oscar party with all those guys. But that's a whole different story. But anyways, I hope, like I said, but I hope Marcy feels a lot better very soon, and that she'll be back to join us for our next show.
Cool.
Yep, and I'll see you all later. See everyone.
Bye.